day. Pratipada is the first day of the month. From Pratipada until the 13th day of the next bright moon, Shukla Trayodashi, one should observe complete celibacy, sleep on the floor, bathe 3 times a day, and thus execute the vow. Varjayid asad alapam, bogan uccha vachangs tata, ahingsra sarvabhutanam vasudeva parayanaha. During this period, one should not unnecessarily talk of material subjects or topics of sense gratification. One should be completely free from envy of all living entities, and one should be a pure and simple devotee of Lord Vasudeva. Trayodashyam ato Vishno snapanam panchakar viboho kadayi chastra drishtena vidina vidiko vidai. Thereafter, following the directions of the Shastra with help from Brahmins who know the Shastra, on the 13th day of the moon, one should bathe Lord Vishnu with 5 substances, milk, yogurt, ghee, sugar, and honey. Pujam cha mahatim kuryad vitta shatya vivarjita chadum nirupya payasi shipivishtaya vishnave. Suktena tena purusham yajeta susamahitaha naivedyam chati gunavad dadyat purusha tushtidam. Giving up the miserly habit of not spending money, one should arrange for the gorgeous worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is situated in the heart of every living entity. With great attention, one must prepare an oblation of grains boiled in ghee and milk and must chant the Purusha Sukta mantra. The offerings of food should be of varieties of tastes. In this way, one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So some of the verses we're reading here sounded like the Brahmacharya Ashram. You know, sleep on the floor, maintain celibacy, worship Vishnu, get up early. This is a continuing description of this 12-day vrat called the Payavrata. Called Payavrata because the central austerity is just drinking milk, but you can see there's much more to it than that. And I wanted to focus on the vrat part. We've been going through different themes, as according to yesterday, it was giving prasadam, feeding different personalities. So I was thinking, well, how to focus on this? And so I thought, well, let's think about the idea of vrata. Now, vrata, of course, means a vow. And this vrata is pertinent. We're on this ekadasi. Ekadasi is meant to be a vrat. Srila Prabhupada made it quite easy for us in the sense that we don't have to completely fast. We can just fast from grains and beans, of course, but increased hearing and chanting. That was our following of Ekadashi that Srila Prabhupada recommended. But, you know, the orthodox following of Ekadashi Vrata is quite severe, we would say, I think. Not only don't you load up on grains the night before so you can make it, but you can only eat at noon. That's your last meal on the 10th day. And then you go through, maybe Pran can correct me, do you not sleep that night also? You sleep that night. Okay, and the next day, of course, there's no drinking of water, what to speak of eating, all the way through to the Dvadashi. Now, at that interval, you know, that famous interval that we have on the calendars and became famous with the pastime of Ambarish and Durvasa, there's a certain time when you have to break the fast, and you break that, I think, one way is through some milk preparation, something light like that. But then you don't eat until noon of that day, the Dvadashi, and you don't eat again, you know. And, of course, there's no sleeping through that night, so it's just chanting throughout the night. So it's pretty severe, we would say. So that's Orthodox Ekadashi Vrat. But I think for us, the main vratas that we observe throughout our Krishna conscious career are these vows that you take at initiation. That is, Srila Prabhupada gave the standard of no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, and chanting 16 rounds a day. I think this is what you say at initiation. And Srila Prabhupada took it very seriously. You know, there were so many initiations, especially with Prabhupada present, where the fire is burning, the devotees are there, the deities are open, right? And you're taking your vows, and it's a very serious commitment. And the idea is that you'll do that for the rest of your life. It's not just for some time. This vrata is a permanent, eternal vow that you take. Now, you know, Srila Prabhupada was very serious about that, and sometimes, as I think this was mentioned in one of the classes, or recently someone mentioned, that one devotee asked him, well, what does it mean to love or to have bhakti for the spiritual master? And the answer was to maintain your vows and to keep serving throughout your lifetime. It wasn't something emotional or some feeling, but he saw it as the proof was that one actually follows the vows and maintains them. And so what happens when we take a vow? Why is it necessary to take a vow? Why are they really important in our whole process of devotional service? So really what a vow is a certain expression of will, isn't it? An expression of will. And it's a vow to somebody. You don't just take a vow in a vacuum. It's a vow that you take by the grace and in order to cement or establish or strengthen a relationship with some superior. Isn't it? I mean, you could take a vow, I'm sure in the Vedic culture, you could take a vow to Shiva, you could take a vow to Indra and perform some sacrifice for getting something, going to the heavenly planet, so forth. But why do you have to take a vow? Because the understanding is that that in the process of, as time goes on, there's going to be temptations, there's going to be feeling that you want to break that vow, you want to do something else. And obviously, the four regulative principles, well, that's a restriction. That, you know, why do we have to have a restriction? Because we have a tendency to do those things. That's right in the Bhagavatam. Loke vivaya misha madhya seva. It is said that the general tendency in human society is for people to get into intoxication, meat eating, and illicit sex, you know. So there has to be restriction. So the idea is that by taking a vow, and especially keeping a vow, you strengthen your spiritual muscles, so to speak. You cement and you establish and strengthen a relationship with a superior, in our case, of course, with the spiritual master, and with Krishna and the whole parampara. To take a vow is kind of a promise, isn't it? You take a vow, and the idea is, for instance, when you go on a parakram, the first thing you do is that you go to a certain place. Is it Gopeshwar temple? And you make a firm vow. Yes, we're going to follow through on this 30-day parakram, this orthodox parakram of Vrindavan parakram. And because it's known that there's going to be difficulties, there'll be hurdles and obstacles along the way where you'll be tempted to give it up, right? So you've taken this vow. You say, no, I can't give it up. I've taken a vow, you know, and I made a promise to spiritual master, to Gopeshwar, to Krishna, to do this vow. So this is an important part of our sadhana, and it's similar to what we find in these verses where you instruct the mind. There's this whole manak shiksha from Raghunath Das Goswami, isn't it? Very important work for us, where he's instructing his mind. You know, guru goshte goshta layesu sujane busaragare swamandreshi namne vajanava yuva dvanda sadane sada dambam hitva kuda datamapu vamata tadamahe svanta datas chadabidabhiya che dritapada. This whole thing, you know. He says, my dear mind, now, please, give up all dumba. Give up all deceit. You know, deceit. The mind is very tricky. Now give up all deceit. Give up all false pride. And develop unprecedented attraction and love for my guru. Guru Goshte, the residents of Vrindavan, the lands of Vrindavan, the Brahmins, the Vaishnavas, Bhusuda. The Bhusuda are the demigods of the earth, right? Those are the Brahmins. Bhusuda Ganesh. Swamantre, my mantra, that's understood to be Gayatri. And of course, the holy name. And of course, Radha Krishna, the divine couple. And in this way, I take your lotus feet. He spoke into his mind and prayed, do this, instructing him. And it goes through 12 verses of that. So the idea is to try to discipline the mild mind and the senses, which are always dragging us away from our chosen path. We know by intelligence what's to be done and what's not to be done. By hearing Srila Prabhupada's books, by serving, by hearing the devotees, there's no question of what the right thing is to do. But we have these tendencies to fight against it because of our conditioning. So taking vows, just like Damodar Vrat, we just completed Damodar Vrat. Okay, this month I'll only eat once a day, I'll chant 25 rounds, or if you're in Vrindavan, you know, you go on Parakram every day, so many things that you vow to do. And it gives you the spiritual strength to actually do those things. And if you complete the Vrat, you ideally come to a different platform of devotion. You've broken through certain barriers. That's what Ekadashi is meant to be, the day of Hari, right? Hari Vasa, in which you make advancement. In other words, you break out of certain patterns of behavior that kind of keep you going, you know, keep you on the same level. But on this particular day, you take a vrat to do more service and less sense gratification in general, and you hopefully, you know, get to a different level. So this idea of taking a vow in the Bhagavad Gita, we find that comes up also. Remember that verse in the 7th chapter, Yesham Tvantakatam Papam Jananam Punyakarmanam Te Dvandra Mohane Mukta Bhajante Mam Dridavrata. Dridavrata, right? A firm vow. So what is Krishna saying there? Well, obviously Gita is always in context. What he says in the previous verse, Ichadvesha Samotena Dvandra Mohena Bharata Savabhutani Sammohang Sargayanti Parantapa. That all of us in this material world, having come to this material world, we're overwhelmed with attraction and repulsion, desire and hate, as Prabhupada says. And from that grows the delusion of duality. That this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad. And Lord Chaitanya directly says, actually, this is all an illusion. There's nothing really good or bad in this world. It just is. But because of our conditioning, because of our senses, certain things are pleasurable, certain things are painful. And we spend our life trying to maximize the pleasurable and minimize the painful. And it's just in the realm of illusion, in the modes of nature. So this Dvandra Moha is very powerful. Dvandra Moha means the delusion of duality. And everybody who comes into this world, you know, either, you know, from Mahavishnu we're injected, or each time we're born, you know, we also come into the world in a sense, we're overwhelmed with these dualities. How to break out of it? Those dualities and that delusion of duality keeps us bound in this world. So Krishna gives the formula. Antakatam papam. First thing is you have to give up sinful life. You see? That in itself requires jiravada. But he's some, you know, willpower. So yesham antakatam papam janana punya karmanam. Performing pious activity. It's understood that in this case punya means that bhakti unmukhi punya. That which gives rise to bhakti. In other words, all the auspicious things that we do to advance in devotional service. That's what it means here. Te dvandva moha nirmukta. One becomes liberated from the delusion of duality. And in that state, one can serve me with a firm vow. In other words, if we're too beset by the illusory energy, and our mind is being whipped around by the dualities of pleasure and pain and heat and cold, it's very difficult to be fixed in anything, what to speak of bhakti. Getting that vyavasayatmaka buddhi, that calm, focused, determined mind and intelligence is really a basic principle of any yoga process, and especially bhakti yoga. In the second chapter, Krishna speaks about that. He says, how does one get this vyavasayatmaka buddhi, this steady intelligence? And he gives this whole section there, prajahati yada kaman sarvan partamanogatan apandeva manatushtas titta bhagyas tadoshite. These are the symptoms of one who has gotten it, right? given up all desires that arise from the mind, sarvam partham atmaneva manatushta, and being satisfied in the self, tushta. And this is a symptom. Impervious, steady, even in the difficulties. Dukeshona vignamana, sukeshona vikataspaha. You see, the Maya works in both ways. There's both the positive and negative. There's always some threefold miseries you're suffering from, or they're coming at you or threatening you. But at the same time, there are all of these allurements for enjoyment. There's two sides of the same coin. So, dukeshona vignamana, sukeshona vikataspaha. One whose mind is not disturbed by any difficulties or pains that may come, and who is also not desiring sukha, material happiness. And he said, sukha, vita raga baya krodha. This phrase comes up several times in Bhagavad Gita. This is the first time. Vita raga baya krodha. Giving up attachment, fear, and anger. Sittadhiya munaruchyate. This is the principle. So this is a nice platform to come to, how to get there. That's the process. And it ultimately comes down to, what is that? Raga dvesha vimuktai stu vishayanindriya aishchanam atma vashe vidheya atma prasadam adigachati. Now prasadam means different things. Some of our Prabhupada called it getting the mercy. One can get the mercy in this way of Krishna. But it also means a calm and focused mind. Prasadam, clear mind. You look at Baladev commentaries, you'll find that. So the key phrase there is atma vashe vidheya atma. Prabhupada's famous phrase, the regulative principles of freedom. By following the regulative principles of freedom, and now isn't that a wonderful phrase? Regulative principle means you're being regulated, right? Which would seem to mean not free, right? We're being restricted. But those regulative principles free you from the bondage of the material energy. So he's saying that by following those, atma vidheya atma, atma vashaya, one can control the self. Atma vashaya, in all of the meanings of atma. Mind, body, and words, right? Senses. Atma vashaya. And raga dvesha vimuktaistu vishayanudhi aishchadam. Even when the senses are moving about the object of the senses. This is what we're all about. We don't go off to the caves and the mountains and the forest to get away from all of the allurements so we can practice yoga. We stay in the cities, or even here, it's basically, you know, in the civilization. But still, as the senses are moving, you don't have any raga dvesha. That's the key. Raga dvesha vimuktaistu, vishayan indriyaischadan. The senses are moving about the issue, vishayas, but the attraction isn't there. Rasavarjam, rasopyasya padam drishtrani vartate. So that, but this this vidheyatma, we're back again to the regulative principles, and we're back again to taking vows and being determined to follow these principles that we learn about from Srila Prabhupada's books and from those who speak purely from the books. So you can't really get around this principle of adopting this determined state of mind and taking vows and you know, instructing your mind in order to carefully follow these principles. We know how wonderful it is to be in an ecstatic kirtan. You know, last night, I had a nice experience down at the preaching center in Gainesville. I went down there. And, you know, I've been going there. When I come here, I come every 6 months. I've been doing that for years now. And it was so nice it came in. I was a little late. They started the kirtan at 6. And it was already going full bore. You know, they have like, about 15 young people living there. And there was maybe eight or nine of them in there. And the kirtan was already raging. You know, everyone was chanting at the top of their lungs, and they were experiencing, you know, kirtan ras. So I came in there, and they wanted me to lead, so I started leading. Gradually, more and more came in. Before no, we had this rip-roaring kirtan going on there. Now, you know, we should not... That's not something to take for granted. You know, being able to be enthusiastic for kirtan is a symptom of advancement. Obviously. And here I was so pleased to see that here's these devotees who are making advancement, and they're into chanting Hare Krishna. So that's not something that comes automatically. That comes by following the regular principles of freedom. To get the taste for the holy name and for spiritual and for devotional service in general comes due to some purification of the heart. You know, someone may come into the temple and or you go on the street. You know, we do Harinam Sankirtan. So here we are out in, you know, a perfect example in a football game last Saturday. And there were literally thousands of people who came by. And because of the nice rhythm and the dance and the general joy of the devotees, people would come by and they would do a little dance or something, you know. You know how it is, you know. They get off on it and take my picture, you know. Okay, fine, that's cool. But it's very, very rare to see anyone chanting, you know, they don't want to chant. And it's just a fleeting thing for them, you know. They're attracted to the beat, basically, you know, and that's it. And then they're off to their football game or whatever they're doing, and they forget all about us, you know. So it's also, you know, I'm not going to compare that involvement to a devotee's involvement in the kirtan, but it's also possible to just kind of come and be in the kirtan and be chant japa and have the mind not really focused on the holy name, not praying from the bottom of your heart. So many things. We experience that. I've experienced it myself. My mind is wandering. So what is it, you know, we read about in the Shastra, we read about in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the standard of what, you know, the taste for the holy name is, or the descriptions. Like Rupa Goswami has this Namashtaka. He has 8 verses. It's at the end of his Stavamala. And, you know, what does he describe there? You know, he's saying the last 2 verses, Sudidashita Dhanarti Dashaye Ramya Chit Ganasukaswarupine Nama Gokala Mahotsavayate Krishna Purna Babushe Namo Namah. He's offering his obeisance again and to the holy name. So the first line, he says, Sudidashita Dhanarti Dashaye, that this holy name, O holy name, you destroy all of the difficulties, all of the sufferings of anyone who takes shelter of you. Sudita ashita jana arti. Arti is pains. Rashiye. Rashiye means heaps. There's heaps of sufferings that we're undergoing. Chanting the holy name destroys it all. That's great. Sudita ashita jana ramya chid kana sukha swarupine. It is the very form of delightful chid gana sukha. Means concentrated, thick spiritual happiness is coming from this holy name. You know, that's what's in the. He is chanting the same mantra we're chanting, but they're experiencing a whole different level of bhakti and love. So, Ramya Chit Gana Sukha Sorupine Nama Gokula Mahotsavayat. O holy name, you are a festival of joy for everyone in Gokula. Nama Gokula Mahotsavayate Krishna Purna Babushe. You are the full form of Krishna, in other words, Nanda from Bindanaminamina. And the last verse, which serves as the basis of that song that we know, the Prabhupada made famous, Narada Muni Bhajane Veena. You know, Narada is playing his Veena, and the whole universe is in ecstasy and chanting and dancing. This is the basis of the song. And his Gitavali, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote many songs about the holy name, and he used Namashtaka for the basis of some of them. So he says, Narada Vino Jivana. Sudhomi niryasa maruri pura from Krishna nama kamam spudame rasane rasena sada. So this is actually a prayer. So he's saying there, O holy name, you are the inspiration for the veena of Narada. Narada just doesn't play veena for music. It's accompanying the chanting, you know. Narada vino jivana sudhomi niryasa maruri pura. What does that phrase mean? This is experience of Rupa Goswami, our Rasacharya. We were supposed to be Rupa Nuga. So, Sudhormi Niryasa Maruri Pura. So, someone else can help me if I miss some of the words. But Pura means a flood, right? Sudhormi means waves of nectar. Niryasa means concentrated. Maruri Pura, a flood of sweet waves of concentrated nectar. This is what he's experiencing by just chanting Hare Krishna. You see? This is what the name has, unlimited. Tvam Krishna, if you please, O holy name. Please always appear on my tongue with great relish. Let me always have a taste for chanting the holy name. So, you know, this is our birthright. This is our heritage. This is where we want to go, to that platform where we can experience the holy name and everything about Krishna Kaya and Krishna Seva with that same enthusiasm and taste that Rupa Goswami is describing here. But how do we get from here to there? You know, this is the natural state of the living entity. So what it is our, I have not carefully gone through the process of purification. And it's all there, it's laid out for us. So by this process of vrata, by renewing our determination, if you will. At any time in our devotional life, we can renew our vows and renew our determination, get serious, and do some of those things that we haven't been doing so seriously, and give up some of those things that we've been letting ourselves do. And in this way, develop this taste that will obliterate all of the taste for the material life. That's the idea, is that sometimes there are these prayers. I can't think of one immediately. Well, what is this? Where they say, there's some description of a pastime, and they say, may Krishna's pastimes protect you in this way. Yes. I think this is one. Jalakevita lalakata tadamuk tupanak pihita radhikaya vadana chagadabhadukoka yunabhagatana sangatana kautiki Krishna. This is a verse from the Pajavali. It's really nice to get into the Pajavali because these are Rupa Goswami's favorite verses. Isn't that nice? You know, you see someone's pile of cards. Remember how you used to have these pile of cards? Well, what verses are you into? What verses are you memorizing? These are the verses that Rupa Goswami thought were so nice that he put them in his own nectar file. This is Rupa Goswami's nectar file. So what is Jagat Abhatu, if I'm not mistaken, I think this means these pastimes protect the whole universe. So he's describing there, it's a little intimate, but not really. He says, Jalakeli talalakala tadamuk tapanak pihita radhikaya vadana. That Krishna and Radharani are in Radhakund, and Krishna's covering and exposing Radharani's face. He's just playing, you know, with his hands. And to describe it, it's just like seeing two swans or something come together and separate, come together and separate. This is the devotees meditating. But the beauty of the language, Jalakeli, in their water passing, Jalakeli, Talala Kalatu, and Krishna's hands are trembling. He's so excited. Tarala Karatala. Did you know that Karatala, the word Karatala, actually just means palms of your hand? The Karatals are meant to be extensions of like clapping, isn't it? Karatala. So Tarala Karatala is trembling hands. Krishna's so ecstatic, he's trembling as he covers and opens Radharani's face, and this is what he's playing. Pastime. He says, let it protect. Why does it protect the universe? Because it attracts the mind away from mundane pastimes, mundane activities that keep us bound here. So all of Krishna's pastimes are like that. But in order to allow those pastimes to protect us from attraction to the material world, we need to take these vratas seriously and these determination. And at any point in our devotional life, we can become more determined to follow. Some of us have been, you know, up and down a little bit, but you come to a point, maybe you get later in life, when, you know, the fires are kind of banked a little bit of sense gratification. It's actually a great blessing, you know, to get older, because you have a, you know, as long as you're, you know, still have your health somewhat intact, because suddenly you can see the whole sweep of your life, and you can see, whoa, you know, whatever, all everything else I was doing was just a waste of time. And the only thing that was any value was Krishna consciousness, because that stays with you. And you can really throw yourself into more bhajan, more sangha, you know. And it's so wonderful to see, you know, when you go to Vrindavan and you see some of these older Vaishnavas, you know, they may be suffering this disease, that disease, but there's this bliss about them, right? Where do you see that in the Western world? You know, go to a nursing home sometime and see what you see. A lot of misery, you know, a lot of suffering, and it's ultimately the suffering is in the mind, right? So you have these Vaishnavas, yeah, they may be limping along on their way to the temple, you know, but they look blissful, and they are blissful because they're, you know, on a higher platform beyond the body. So this is what vows are for. Vows are for at a certain point when we're inspired. And we feel a connection, we want to reestablish a connection or strengthen the connection with the spiritual master, with Krishna, with Lord Chaitanya, with the acharyas. You take a vow, okay, from today on, you know, I'm definitely going to chant my 16 rounds without fail, no question. Hey, I'm going to chant 25 rounds from now on, you know. Make a little more time, do a little less sleeping, a little less eating, whatever it may be. So if you make that vow, especially if you make it in the temple, you make it to, you know, Radha Shyama Sundar, you know, then, if you're serious, that vow will help you when the temptation is not to do it, and you become strengthened, and you reach another platform of regulation where it's kind of built in. You know, I'm not bragging or anything, but way back when, you know, Pushkar, I can remember, back in some of you, I don't know if anyone else is here from the old Henry days, Henry Street, that, you know, there was no question. You didn't sleep in, you know. They cleared the floor. You get up, cold shower, freezing shower. You go to Mangalartik, you know. So I never got away from that, you know. It was 36 years, Mangalartik. I may have missed a few due to unforeseen circumstances. But it's just like, there's no way. I can't, you know, just turn over in the bed and not go to Mangalartik. So that's great. It's not like it's a big austerity now. It's just a habit. It's just like built in. So that's fortunate. That was Mil Prabhupada's blessing for setting up these temples and these ashrams and things. So that's the idea, that you get into it, you take a vrat, you undergo some austerity, and then you get to a different platform of regulation, and you can build on that, you know, through further effort. So it's almost time. If there's some questions, comments on the idea of taking vows and keeping them. Kapila Prabhu, who has the mic? Hold on.
In the last verse, you were reading grains cooked in ghee and milk.
Uh-huh.
Can you explain that?
Probably not. Where were we? Bhoji ate it. Yeah. You sure it was the last verse? No, it was text 52 here. Let's see. Prayer and oblation of grains boiled in ghee and milk, and must chant the Purusha Sukta mantra. Well, is that inconceivable? Take some milk, add some ghee, stir it around, boil it up, add the farina, and make an oblation out of it. It sounds like halva. What else? Add a little sugar and you got halva. I really can't explain it, but there it is. And we could go to the Sanskrit and see, you know, what's going on there. But I'm sorry? That could be, after all, yeah. This is Payo Vrata, maybe different varieties of Payo. But Aditi, with all of this going on, with, you know, distributing, she herself is just supposed to drink milk. Right, she's distributing all of the sod, making all these opulent things. Yeah, but the other thing is with the distribution. Okay. Anyone else? Yes, Prabhu. Gunn and Ryan G.
There were a number of letters from Srila Prabhupada in the 60s mostly. I know of at least three or four where he was telling the devotees that on appearance days of Vishnu, that they should have the feast of
Ekadasi
feast. And I can't remember, to be truthful, exactly how we did it in the early days when I was a brahmachari, you know, and Prabhupada was present. But we don't observe that here. We have grains on Nishinga Chaturdasi and on Ramachandra's appearance day and various things like that. Can you make any comments?
This is one. I can comment on that. This is a controversy and will remain a controversy, because it's sure and certain, and devotees can remember this. I talked to some devotees that in the early days, Prabhupada did not insist on that. I mean, those who were there in Janmashtami and that big Janmashtami festival in New Vrindavan can maybe recall, you know. But Prabhupada was present in the West at times for these festivals. And he didn't, as far as I can tell, he didn't insist on Ekadasi preps at that time. Later on, he did, there are letters, I've seen it, where he said, yes, this should be Ekadasi preparations on the appearance of Vishnu Tattvas. So the question is, should we now say, well, okay, that was then, this is now, now we should become more austere and do only that. But you also have this problem, and that is that, say, on Janmashtami, you have so many people coming to the temple who are not, you know, devotees. In other words, they're not following devotees. There are some kind of devotees who are coming to the temple on Janmashtami. But they need prasadam during the day. You know, you have, like in San Diego, many other temples, people come all during the day, and they can only spend a certain amount of time if Janmashtami falls during the week, which it often does. They need to get prasadam. So, yes, it would be possible, probably, to do Ekadasi preps. But it's much more difficult to have really opulent and massive Ekadashi preps. So therefore, they distribute this en masse, even on Janmashtami. But I would say that devotees, yes, that's one thing that we can come to ourselves, that on an individual basis. I don't, you know, at this point in time, it would have to be a GBC resolution, you know, and maybe that's something we can aspire for. But I would say individually, we should know the standard. It's not a big deal, like on Janmashtami, to break the fast at midnight with just non-grain preps. I do it all the time. I just eat a little light sabji or something and then take rest. We should know the standard. You should know the standard. And really, it should be what I would say is available that we can, you know, follow that. And, you know, it's not really that great an austerity to, like on the Sringa Chaturdasi in the evening, to just eat Ekadasi preps. And if it's not a big deal, well, why not do it? Because mostly you have people, it's all internal here. It's not that you're doing a huge prasadam distribution on that day. Kamalabhati had something.
You're saying, you know, in taking vows and being determined to, and just in aspiring to get a taste for chanting, to pray from the bottom of our heart. And is there a bottom of our heart?
Interesting question. it's a manner of speaking. It means it's an important phrase, because what it means is that not superficially. In other words, we can pray, or we can pray, you know what I mean? In other words, you can really pray from the depths of your heart, say, put it that way. In other words, full on, really mean it, you know, and those kind of prayers are more likely to be answered. I mean, one thing I just wanted to mention, it's interesting, you have this daily prayer now for the installation of Balaram. I really believe in these prayers, you know, the like you say, before the deities. I remember the Robin George case. Many of you remember that whole episode. And at a certain point, I think all temples were enjoined to pray, you know, to get through this, because it looked like it was going to bring down the whole movement at one point. I don't know if you know the history, but it was pretty scary for a while. And so I remember in L.A., you know, I was up there a lot, and I was doing, and they had the prayer, you know, especially because they were really under the gun. They would definitely lose their temple. So they, you know, please save the temple, you know, please let us get through this, whatever they was praying, you know. So, you know, well, it worked, right? Somehow we got through that. We didn't have to try to come up with $33 million, which was, you know, in 1980s, with like $100 million today. It was impossible to even think about that. It was worth more than everything, all the temples in the movement at that point. That was the original judgment. It originally came down to about $1 million, and that was dealt with, and it was able to be. Okay, there was that. Then, in L.A., they kept the prayer, but they changed it. You know, they still have a daily prayer, right? And the daily prayer is for sending Sankirtan devotees. We want to distribute more books, you know. Sura's there, Suras is there, you know, all the time. We want to distribute more books. Please send us more Sankirtan devotees so we can increase, you know, distribute. So it's got to the point, it's going on 20 years now, where there's only a few devotees who know the prayer, they more or less mumble the prayer, you know, it's like, it's not really from the depths of your heart, from the bottom of your heart. And yet, it's done before the deities, they keep getting Sankirtan devotees. They're always coming to L.A., they're distributing books, they did that. It worked. So what I'm saying is Krishna responds to prayer. He says so, you know, and so... This is going to be my theme on Sunday. They asked me to give class again, the power of prayer. That we're given so many prayers, like this favorite prayer I have. Forgive me, I'm going a little over time. Queen Kunti, you know, Prabhupada wanted us to learn these prayers. He chanted them himself. They're obviously his favorites. And this one prayer, you know, Twaye me nannivishaya matiyu madhupate sakrit ratamun bahataran ha gange bhagamadanvati. It's a great prayer. Anyone can say this prayer in front of the deities. I put it into a little poem. Oh, I say, O Madhava, it's really Madhupati, Madhu's Lord. O Madhava, please ever fill my mind with thoughts of thee, not any other kind. As Ganges torrent flows into the sea, let all my love flow constantly to thee. You know, what's not to like? Perfect prayer. So we can utter that prayer. Now you can utter it, you know, in just in rote, or you can utter it with sincerity, right? Depending on. So if you utter it with total sincerity, like Kunti or like Srila Prabhupada chanted, then that's from the depths of your heart, or from the, what we call the bottom of your heart. It's just a weird phrase. I mean, that is a long answer to kind of a grammatical question, but forgive me. You ask about that. Yes, Pran. Yes, and then we have to end because it's getting late.
I was remembering that how important you have mentioned that we all took bow to our gurus, and how, and I was thinking of Prakashananda Saraswati Thakur's dialogue. Mm-hmm. I was listening one lecture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, not listening, reading. Then he says, when those Mayavadi Sannyasi asked him, why are you not studying
Vedanta?
Vedanta, you should act like a sannyasi. So he quoted those verses, you know, Guru Mure Murkha Diki Korila Sasan, Murkha Tumi Tumar Nahiko Vedanta Dikar, Krishna Mantra Japagya, Ehi Mantra Sar, Krishna Mantra Hoite Hive Sangsara Muchankir. So then in the translation, Prabhupada put it in the purport, very nice. He says, then they asked.
Forgive us. Few of us speak Bengali. What do those two verses mean? The spiritual master said, oh, you're a fool, right?
I'm coming to that.
Are you going to explain that? Okay.
Okay. So then the sannyasi is asking, all right, but you, what is your problem? You don't act like us, one of us. You are one of us. Act like one of us. Right. He said, well, what can I do? I went to my guru, and guru told me that you are a fool. Right. And Prabhupada, in the lecture also I heard, he says that in absolute platform, this is very difficult to understand, how a greatest intellectual person take the position of a fool, like my Guru Maharaj. He took a shelter of Gorkishodhar Babaji, who apparently like an ignorant villager, he writes like that. So he said, but in absolute platform, this is normal. So Prabhupada writes, every disciple should always think himself fool at the lotus feet of Guru. Right. So then in reply to Mahaprabhu said that, well, my Guru saw me as a fool, so he told me, you are fool number one, you should just chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So then he said, but then why, this sannyasi asked, why are you chanting and dancing like crazy then? Okay, you're chanting, why are you dancing, crazy, and crying and all this? He said, no, Krishna Mahamantra hito sabhav, jare jo iche Krishna tare oiche bhav. It is the nature of Krishna Nam Mahamantra. It is not me, I'm not trying to dance or cry or chant. It is that as soon as I follow my guru's instruction, chanting, automatically all these things happen.
Right.
So my point is that Krishna also rewards according to as we seriously take this path.
That was my point with getting the taste. You know, if we follow, then the taste comes naturally. Okay, we better end now. Glory to Prabhupada. Thank you very much.